only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again. Nice to be with us, listeners, on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. Friday, December 13th. Friday the 13th. Do you worry about things like that? My engineer, Pat Parker, is shaking his head. No, I don't either. I really don't pay that much attention. But there are a lot of people who, they're a little bit leery about December or Friday the 13th. Doesn't happen all that often, time or two, sometimes not even that many times during a year. But this is one of those times, Friday the 13th. So if you worry about that, watch out for black cats today. We are scheduled to chat with Butler City Township Joint Fire Chief Chris Switala about holiday fire safety, but fire sirens have gone off here in the city of Butler within the last 10 minutes or so, so we're not sure whether the chief is going to be able to be with us or not. Now, the early word was that this may not be a working fire, but we don't have anything concrete on that at this point. As we say, the fire trucks just rolled within the past 5-10 minutes. So we'll keep you posted on that. Hopefully the chief will be able to join us to talk about fire safety over the holidays. There's a lot of things that happen during the holiday season that make house fires more common, more frequent, sadly. I mean, it's a sad thing any time of the year, but at holiday time, Rough. There are countless stories of families who've lost a home right around Christmas time, lose all their gifts, lose their home. Yeah. So we want to talk about some of the safety precautions that you can take during the holiday season with regard to burning a fireplace. I know when I was a kid in our house, about the only time we ever burned the fireplace was over the Christmas holidays. You know, we didn't use it for warmth throughout the winter. We had a furnace for that, but always burn the fireplace at holiday time just for the atmosphere as much as anything else, you know, sitting around in the living room in front of the brick fireplace. So there's some danger there, some cautions there. And, of course, all of the electric lights that we have, the decorations and so on, extension cords. Going to some people's house, they got extension cords all over the place for Christmas lights. And candles, of course. A lot of folks burn candles at Christmas time. Maybe that's the only time of the year. So there are some precautions there. We want to talk about those sorts of things with the chief. And obviously, you know, there's a fire call. That's where he needs to be. So maybe he'll be able to join us today. I'm not sure. We're also going to be talking about some of the changes in the way that people are buried these days, and a little bit of the history of burial customs and funeral rites here in the United States. Spencer Geibel will be joining us from the Spencer Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services here in Butler to talk a little bit about the history of the way we bury the dead here in the United States. So that's coming up a little bit later on the program today. We'll open up the phone lines initially, though. Phone number is 283-2525, 283-2525. Does anybody live close to a pond or a lake? Is there any ice yet? Somebody asked me that the other day, and I said, I don't know. I can't imagine that there's any ice on the rivers yet. We've had some cold weather. We've had some cold mornings. Well, yesterday it was 12 above. But then we had the bright sunshine, you know. And it seems like the days where it's been really cold, we've had sunshine. And, you know, even if it's below freezing, if you've got a bright sunny day, think ice is going to melt. I mean, you've seen that on roads and sidewalks and porches and everything. So I don't think it's been cold enough. Certainly, even if there's a thin glaze of ice, there's certainly not enough to do any ice fishing or ice skating or anything like that. Which is a little bit of a change. I don't know whether it's climate change that's leading to this. I know that we very seldom now have a white Christmas here in our area of western Pennsylvania. I mean, we get one occasionally. But we've had a lot of brown Christmases in recent years over the past couple of decades. We get snow eventually and ice, but doesn't seem to be around Christmas time. So maybe that has to do with the later ice formation. I can remember in our family, one of the things we always used to do during the holiday season, at Christmas, New Year's, maybe the week between, was to make homemade ice cream. You know, we had one of the old-fashioned ice cream makers, and you mixed up the recipe and you put it in a can, and then you had the big tank that you filled with ice, and you turned the crank and made homemade ice cream. And we used to go down. I grew up in a town along the Allegheny River, and we used to go down to the river and chop out ice to make the ice cream. Now, that ice doesn't come in contact with the ice cream. It just goes into the big barrel surrounding the container with the the cream mixture in it. But we would go down and try to take a couple burlap bags down to the riverbank and chop out big chunks of ice and then bring them back. We usually made it down in the basement because it's kind of messy. You know, you got the melting ice, you got to put salt in there. It's a whole routine. It was great when we were kids because we'd take turns turning the crank, making ice cream. But I don't think there's any ice on the river this year. I have to hurry up to get it by Christmas. Christmas, week and a half away. And I can also remember, maybe you have memories of this as well, I can remember at Christmas time, and then, you know, when you're a kid, when you have a holiday break from school between Christmas and New Year's, going skating on the pond in our neighborhood over the holidays. So obviously it was colder back then than it tends to be now. Well, we'll see. We could still get a pretty good cold snap, couldn't we? Hey, we're pleased to be able to chat with the Butler City, Butler Township Joint Fire Chief, Chris Switala, and he's just arrived here in the studio. As I mentioned earlier, we weren't sure whether we were going to be able to talk with the chief today because sirens went off here in the city of Butler within the past 10 minutes ago, and obviously that's where the chief is going to go when the sirens go off. Chief, it's good to see you. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you very much for having me. We had a reported chimney fire. Luckily, it turned out to be just somebody starting up their fireplace, and somebody saw a lot of smoke when they started it up and reported it as a chimney fire. So sorry for the delay in getting here, but everything is good.
Please, we want you to be on the road going to these fires. In fact, we just had a house fire here in the city of Butler right after noon yesterday.
Yes.
Yep. So a house fire any time is a tragedy, but holiday time especially, I think. When I heard the sirens going off 10, 15 minutes ago, I thought, oh, no, not again.
Mm-hmm.
But a chimney fire, or I thought it was a chimney fire, turned out to be just starting up the fireplace. Incidentally, I was talking about that earlier, a few minutes ago, when I mentioned some of the things that we were going to chat about, holiday fire safety in the home. I can remember when I was a kid in our family, we had a beautiful brick fireplace in the living room, but we hardly ever used it except at Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we lit it for atmosphere as much as anything else. You know, the rest of the winter we heated with a furnace. But there can be a danger if you just fire up that fireplace once a year, right?
Correct. Yeah, even if they're only used sporadically,
mm-hmm.
like that, that they should be checked periodically. Because if it just sits for a long period of time in between usage, there could still be possibilities of deterioration in the mortar, particularly if moisture or water gets in the in the chimney flue, and it can present some issues. So,
just like in a road, I suppose, if you get water in the cracks and it freezes, you can
the freeze-thaw cycle
cause damage.
Will cause that mortar in between the bricks, the fire bricks, to fall out. And then once that falls out, there's potential then for the heat from the firebox to dry out some of the structural wood behind there, or an ember to pop into that area and lead to a fire behind the wall. So it is something that should be checked. They recommend having a visual inspection done annually and then cleaned as necessary then.
And, of course, in the lower most of the chimney until you get up above the roof line, there's wood right next to the bricks. You know, I mean, that's the way they're constructed.
Correct. Typically, there's two type of chimney fires that we'll respond to. Number one is just from the creosote buildup in the flue itself, and that's just from a lack of cleaning. The chimney should be swept periodically, and that depends on how much you're using it. Mm-hmm. If you're a heavy user where you're using your fireplace pretty frequently, burning several times per week, it will most likely require being cleaned or swept once a year. But if you only use it a couple times a year just on those special occasions, then you might be able to get it done every couple years. But it should still be, you know, you should still poke your head in the firebox and do that visual inspection. And there's guides online. There's some videos online, actually, from the U.S. Fire Administration, if you go on their website, on how to actually do that. It's something that you can look for yourself, or you just look for those areas of deteriorated mortar. Sometimes, you know, you'll find a bird's nest or something in there that could become a problem. So it's just to look and make sure everything looks intact before you go to use it, and to evaluate how much creosote buildup there may be to see if it does need a cleaning. The second type of chimney fire that we can have is the fire that then starts behind walls. That's from what I mentioned, either that deteriorated mortar where it just dries out that structural wood over decades, and then it just lowers its ignition temperature, makes it easily to ignite, or an ember pops back there and causes a problem.
I've seen a few chimney fires in my day where the creosote buildup catches fire, and it's just like a giant blowtorch coming out the top of the chimney. It's not a small fire.
Correct. You'll see, usually, if it's really bad, large chunks of embers popping out of the top of the chimney. It will sound like a freight train roaring inside the wall inside your home. And so you'll know right away if there's a problem when it's due to that.
In addition to making sure that your chimney is clean of creosote and debris and so on, does it make a difference what kind of wood you burn in your fireplace in terms of a fire danger?
It does. Typically, we recommend that you use seasoned hardwoods that have been dried. If you use something that's more freshly cut, it's going to burn dirtier, so it's going to require you to clean or sweep your chimney out more frequently. Mm-hmm. And it will also produce a lot more smoke. So then you might have some smoke backing up into the home because it's producing more smoke than the flue is designed to vent out, accommodate venting out. So that's one problem. The other problem is if you use something like a pine, something that has a high tar content, that could lead to increased creosote deposits and, you know, again, just burn dirtier and require you to clean it out more frequently.
A lot of pitch and tar in a pine tree. Mm-hmm. People know that even when you see a branch that's been cut off or broken off. The pitch comes out of it, you know. So, okay. Some tips on fireplace usage. Let's talk about extension cords and electric lights. I think most people these days, Chief, because the price of electric lights, Christmas lights, has come down so much. I mean, Gosh, when I was a kid, I think we used the same lights for, all of my childhood years.
Same here.
Never dreamed about replacing them. Nowadays, you can get a string of lights for, a couple of bucks, really.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we would recommend is to upgrade that. I could tell you a story from just myself within the past year that the home I grew up in, my father was relocating, downsizing, and so we were going through all the all belongings in the basement and the attic and cleaning everything out to sell the home. And I took some of the old Christmas decorations that we had, just that had sentimental value to them. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't take the old strings of lights, but there was one decoration that I took that I always had in my window as a little wreath. That was always in my window that had some lights on it. And when I actually plugged that in, I would figure, oh, well, this would be nice to pass on. When I actually plugged that in to try it out, there was a wire that shorted out and the lights blew. And wow. So, it's something you got to be careful of when you're dealing with decorations that might be 30, 40 years old. Those wires can become cracked. They could be frayed. There could be a bad connection and cause a problem. So it's just safer to, particularly with the LEDs, they're cool to the touch. There's so less problems compared to the older ones.
I was going to mention the temperature. I have LED lights on my Christmas tree now, and I mean, you can leave them on all the time. They don't get hot.
Mm-hmm.
All of the energy that's produced is in the form of light and not heat. You take some of those, the common Christmas tree lights of the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, I think they're C7 bulbs, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
They're not real big, but those babies get hot.
Mm-hmm.
They get really hot.
Yep.
And you know how flammable a Christmas tree is after a week or so, being in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that we didn't have more Christmas tree fires when I see how hot those lights get.
Correct. And as I said before, some of the decorations that we did keep then, I ended up taking out some of those older lights that had mm-hmm. those bigger ones in there and either just used them without lights or just replaced them with some LED lights going in there to be able to use those sentimental. So kind of upgraded those. But the Christmas tree fires, they're not as frequent because of some of these changes, particularly with the lights. But if you are using a natural tree and it does dry out, they can go up in a matter of seconds. Mm-hmm. So when they do happen, they can be very fast-growing fires and therefore can be very deadly fires. So that's what you want to watch out for, particularly if you're having a natural Christmas tree in your home.
We'll take a break and we'll talk about some more holiday time home fire safety tips with Chief Chris Switala here on WISR. We will be back right after these words. Time for a checkup for your pet. We recommend Suburban Animal Clinic. Or maybe Fido or Tabby's not feeling so well. Suburban Animal Clinic, a small animal veterinary practice located Route 8 south of Butler at the intersection with Thorncrest Drive. It's about 5 miles south of Butler. Suburban Animal Clinic, in the spirit of Dr. Dennis Damon. Their services include wellness checks for your pet, of course, also emergency care. They have laser therapy, dental available, also prescription diets. One of the things that are problems for a lot of our pets these days, being overweight. Microchipping, they can handle that as well. Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, south of Butler. If you're headed south from Butler toward Pittsburgh, as soon as you pass all the auto dealerships, start looking on your left. That's Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8 South at Thorncrest Drive. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back. We're talking with Butler City Township Joint Fire Chief Chris Switala. Just some reminders, some thoughts on fire safety in the home during the holiday season. Extension cords. We mentioned Christmas lights before. Christmas decorations, not just on a tree, but all the people have them in windows and other places, and you see extension cords running here and there. Tips on extension cords. First of all, never under a rug, right?
Correct. You don't want to have them under a rug just because as they're walked on, that could damage that insulation or wiring that's underneath. And secondly, any type of electrical cord like that is supposed to dissipate the heat that builds up from the electricity passing through that wire into the air. And when you cover it up with a rug like that, or even keep it all coiled up tightly, and when you're using it, it can't dissipate that heat. And over time, that can overheat that insulation, cause it to break down, and then lead to an electrical failure and cause a problem.
I've seen people do this, and it's, you know, if you don't realize the danger, you know, if you only need a 3-foot extension cord, use a 3-foot extension cord. Mm-hmm. Don't use a 25 foot and coil it up very neatly. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe us, do that and plug it in and see how hot it gets. It's like the coil of an electric motor.
Mm-hmm.
It gets hot.
We had, this was a couple years back, a call for an odor of smoke, and it was at a polling place where they had one of the voting machines plugged in, and they had the extension cord about it's a heavy-duty extension cord, but it was a very long one, and it was all coiled up tightly for this voting machine, and as we were looking at it, it was literally melting that insulation from the heat that was built up, and it was all melted together into one glob in that extension cord.
What about the danger of, so, you know, most electrical outlets have two sockets,
mm-hmm.
and you'll see people, they put those multi-plugs in there. I don't know what the official name for mm-hmm. it is, but, you know, trying to get three or four power plugs in there. Can you reach a danger point on that?
Correct. You can. And, yeah, if it's just like Christmas Vacation, you see the Griswold with all the electric plugs in there, that could definitely be an issue. Typically, what we like to recommend is ones that have the surge-protected power strips. They're heavier duty. Mm-hmm. They have a little bit more overcurrent protection built in. So if something does happen, it's another layer built in other than just your circuit breaker or fuse box in your home. The other thing with those is because with those lighter gauge cords, they can more easily overheat. So the surge protectors are one thing that we recommend. And then again, using those LED lights, they're a little bit cooler burning, don't draw as much power, and so they're a little bit safer to use in that regard. But even with those, you always want to read the instructions. There's a lot of fine print on some of the labels or on the boxes with those wiring that tell you don't put more than 5 strands together and things like that. So please follow those instructions.
Let's talk about candles. A lot of folks like to burn candles at holiday. I do. Mm-hmm. I love to get the you know, the pine scented candles and mm-hmm. the peppermint scented candles. Usually the only time of the year that I burn candles. Sometimes I have several going at the same time. What's the danger there? Leaving them unattended, or do they get? I mean, sometimes if you have candles, they're in like a little votive glass or something, and after they've been lit for a few hours, it's pretty much all melted wax. And man, that stuff is hot.
Correct. Those you just mentioned the two things that can really be a problem. Leaving them unattended is obviously a problem. The candles are fine to use if you're using them in a nice non-combustible base like that with no combustibles nearby, and that you're keeping an eye on them. You're only using them in the rooms that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that people have, particularly around the holidays, is they'll light them throughout their home. And then if you have pets have been known to knock them over and then cause fires because they knocked them over onto something that's combustible. And so it's always a good idea just to blow them out whenever you leave the room. They're fine to use when you're in the room, and then blow them out when you leave the room or before you fall asleep, those type of things.
The only ones that I use are ones that are in a glass container, mm-hmm. a bowl, or a votive type thing. Although I have had those things split open.
Correct.
On that, me
that
a
was
going to
be
times.
The second thing that I wanted to
say. I mean, they just get so hot that the glass breaks.
Correct, about the candles. The second problem that can handle, again, it goes back to reading that fine print. If you look on the bottom of a lot of those votive type candles, those glass holders that they come in, it will say on there, do not use for more than 3 hours continuously. Mm-hmm. They'll give you a warning like that because those can happen. And again, when you have it at around a holiday time, people tend to light the candle. They let them burn all day as they have their guests over, and then it becomes a problem as that fails.
I can remember when I was younger, I was still living with my parents. There was a home in our neighborhood that actually caught fire from, I don't know whether they still make these candles or not. They were like decorative candles. You see them in the shape of a snowman or a Santa head or something like that. They're rather large, but they're not contained in anything. It's just wax with a wick, and they're nice to look at. After they start to melt away, they're not so pretty. But that was the cause of this house fire. A family had one of those things, and they were sitting on top of their TV. They left to go visit relatives or something and forgot that it was candle was burning, and it started the house on fire.
Yeah, I could tell you one fire we responded to was on a Christmas Eve where somebody had they had fallen asleep. They had already gone to bed, let their candle burning. It was something like that. It wasn't enclosed in a glass container, and it was in the middle of a wreath decoration as well. And then so as that melted down as they were sleeping, then it ignited that wreath and those decorations. Now, luckily, they had a working smoke alarm, so it gave them early alert to it, and we were able to get there and contain the fire before it became too large. But it was definitely an issue when that happened. You know, we got the call probably around 2 or 3 in the morning. That's why we say make sure that they're out before you fall asleep.
One final thing I want to talk with the chief about, but I owe for a quick break here, so let's do that. I want to talk about the dangers of carbon monoxide this time of year. Very, very dangerous. We will be right back.
Plan ahead. We've all learned from experience that living day to day can lead to too many last-minute surprises, surprises that are often difficult and frustrating to handle. And so it is with a funeral. Planning a proper funeral takes pre-planning, so that during periods of grieving and turmoil, you'll want those arrangements to already be taken care of. Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler has been pre-planning funerals for more than 90 years, and the third generation of the same family is here to help you with that planning process now. Make these choices now. The funeral service, the choice of caskets, which minister, priest, or rabbi, cremation, visitations, flowers, church service or not, all these decisions can be made now before your emotions get in the way of logical and practical decisions. Pre-plan now with Thompson Miller. Think about it, and then call us and meet with us to discuss it privately. Call 724-287-3706. 287-3706. Pre-arrangements. It really makes sense. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller. Because we care.
Chatting for another couple of minutes here with Butler City Township Joint Fire Chief Chris Witala. I want to talk about the dangers of carbon monoxide for a couple of minutes. Deadly gas, and it can kill very quickly. Lots of times we hear about somebody who's pulled into a garage and accidentally left the car running without realizing it. But you can get carbon monoxide poisoning in a home from any open flame, right? I mean, correct. It doesn't have to be leaving the car running in the garage.
Correct. We actually did have a fatality in the city of Butler about 2 months ago. somebody, it was a new heater being used for the first time as it started turning colder this fall, and the heater, it was an older heating unit. It was in an apartment building where they had individual heating units in each unit, mm-hmm. and it ended up, the person initially just called with a medical problem, but they ended up passing away due to the carbon monoxide exposure. They found that at the hospital when they were doing their testing, mm-hmm. The elevated carbon monoxide in their blood, and then they alerted us to go and check the building, and we then found all the carbon monoxide on our meters when we checked the building, so we were able to alert for the other residents in there.
Any open flame is going to produce a certain amount of carbon monoxide. You get a lot more from an open fire or a kerosene heater than you do mm-hmm. from a pilot light on a stove, but it's all producing carbon monoxide. And you can have a crack in the in the heating element of a gas furnace mm-hmm. that can also let deadly carbon monoxide escape.
Correct. Cracked heat exchangers are a leading cause of problems with the furnace that can lead to carbon monoxide issues. And then just problems with venting. Sometimes, again, you'll have an animal build a nest in the vent pipe, and then you get that blockage, and it's not venting properly. So having a working carbon monoxide detector is very important.
You can't see it, you can't taste it, you can't smell it, but it will kill you in very short order. Mm-hmm. Carbon monoxide detectors used to be very expensive. They aren't anymore.
No, and you can get a lot of them as combination with a smoke alarm. And the key is to have it in an area where you can easily hear it when you're sleeping, because mm-hmm. that's when you're most vulnerable. A lot of times people will put them in the basement because that's where most of the sources may be with their furnace and water heater. But if you're sleeping up on the second floor, doors are closed, you may not hear that mm-hmm. alarm. So carbon monoxide will readily migrate throughout the home if there is a problem. So keep it in the area where you sleep to make sure that you're alerted, because that's when you're most vulnerable.
Chief, thanks for stopping in and chatting with us today. These are all good safety points.
I appreciate it. Anytime.
Sure. Chief Chris Switala. Stick around. We have more to come. We're going to talk about the history of the way we bury people here in this country, and it's changed over the years. We'll talk about that coming up on the It's Your Turn program after this break. Back in just a couple of minutes.
Shopping for a mortgage? Don't just compare the mortgage rates. At Armco Credit Union, they'll not only offer a competitive rate, but they may be able to save you money with lower fees and closing costs. Whether you're looking for a VA, FHA, or conventional loan, they're here to help guide you through the mortgage process so you can make the best decision for your situation. Call today, 724-284-2020. Don't have time to call or visit? Apply for a mortgage online at armcocu.com. Like them on Facebook and be the first to learn about their promotions or events. Armco Credit Union is an equal housing opportunity and is federally insured by NCUA.
Butler Health System is a top 100 hospital for getting Doug back to playing with his grandkids and managing his farm.
For ensuring that Craig made it to his daughter's college graduation.
For helping Ray travel to Europe to visit his family.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide nationally recognized care. But more importantly, we know why we have to.
Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back, good friends. As I mentioned to you yesterday and again earlier on the program today, I'm going to talk about how things have changed throughout history in the way we bury people and in funeral rites here in the United States especially. Things are changing more recently as well. Here to discuss the topic with us is Spencer D. Geibel of Spencer Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services here in Butler. Spencer, good to see you. Nice to have you with us
today. You did it. Thank you. Thank you for the invite.
A lot of people may not realize that the way of burial, the way of funerals, has changed rather markedly, actually, here in the United States in the 200-plus years history of our country. In fact, I can still remember when I was a very small child, we had a distant relatives, and one of their family members passed away, and the viewing of the individual was in the living room of their house.
That was common.
Of their farmhouse.
Mm-hmm. That was extremely common. The customs have been evolving for thousands and thousands of years. They always evolve, and they always change, and our culture kind of dictates how they change for different reasons. As you first mentioned, they've changed a lot in the last couple of years. There's been more change in the last 15 years than there has been in the last probably 300 or 500 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Most folks who are 40, 50, 60 and older remember in our country that most funerals were traditional, and they lasted 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
There was 2 or 3 days of viewing at a funeral home, followed by a 3rd or 4th day, whichever it may be. That was a formal, traditional funeral, starting at a funeral home, going to a church, and then proceeding to the cemetery. And that's changed also. It started changing slowly to 2 days to 1 day, and then 1 day to a half day, and now all in 1 day. And this isn't every time. This isn't for every family. This isn't every decision. But it's much more common now that folks are simplifying their traditions versus walking the exact same path their parents did.
And I suppose that a lot of that would be dictated by circumstances. If you had family, you know, living in Arizona or California, yep, or somewhere, that would dictate your plan somewhat.
We are much more transient. We're much more spread out now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
In the 50s and the turn of the century and the 1850s, folks lived and survived where they were raised. And the distant relative was normally a few miles away. Now a distant relative is in California or in Europe. So that changes the time scale behind organizing a funeral or a burial. It also changes who can attend. It also changes the overall design of the services. If we must wait for someone to come in from Seattle, it changes the date of a service. So there are a lot of factors, and there are a lot of really, really potent factors that control how a culture chooses how to formalize the end of someone's life.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of factors, Dave.
And talking about cultural differences, boy, they're remarkable back through history.
It goes and goes.
Well, if you go back to the ancient Egyptians, mm-hmm, I mean, they had mummification.
They pretty much started the scientific process for us.
Mm-hmm.
I guess a little synopsis would be that we offer the embalming practice, the embalming service for different reasons, to sanitize, to preserve, and to restore. Sanitation, preservation, restoration. Now, different cultures embalm a deceased for different reasons. You reference the Egyptians. They embalmed for one primary reason, long-term preservation. So one of the three main goals we have today, they put all their focus into, and their focus was long-term preservation. And as you've seen, they were the best.
Yeah.
They were the absolute best, and most of their practices were from the outside in versus from the inside out.
There were also a history of, I don't know whether they referred to it as cremation or not, but the result was the same. I know in some cultures during Roman times, ancient Roman times,
exactly,
they had funeral pyres.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a form cremation, right?
Yeah, it started with pre-civilized Vikings, and it started that way during the Roman Empire, during the end of the Greek Empire, when the Acropolis was flourishing. As I said earlier, that the Egyptians embalmed for long-term preservation, the Greeks and Romans embalmed mainly for sanitation. They had the city walls. Most of their life was encapsulated by a wall or by a small region. There was a high population in a very small area. So they learned rapidly there were major consequences to having their loved ones not buried or not cremated. And there wasn't much room within the city limits, so they started leaning towards cremation because it was a form of sanitation. It was a form, it was an avenue to protect those who were still living. So the Vikings, the Greeks, and the Romans were the three primary players in pushing cremation. Now, as you know, it's extremely popular today for entirely different reasons, but it started in that era.
Yeah, the sanitation thing, you know, you have to put yourself back in ancient times.
Well,
even in the scriptures, you know, there's the story of Jesus and Lazarus, where Lazarus had commented to Jesus to Lazarus's sisters about, you know, where is he? And he said, well, he's in the tomb. And they said, but it's been 3 days, you know.
They knew what that meant.
Body would have started to decay.
They knew what that meant.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, different cultures do things for different reasons. And the Greeks, Romans, and when the Vikings did it, it was more of a ceremony. As you said earlier, the pyres, the ships that were lit, that was more of a ceremony.
Right, I saw that in the movies where they would put the body of the deceased in a small boat.
Mm-hmm.
And set the boat on fire and then push it out to sea.
With some of their tokens, with sometimes even some of their slaves, with sometimes some of their prized possessions, some of their war memorabilia. So it was more ceremonial for the Vikings. And that ranged between 1,000 years and probably 1,800 years when they started through the peak of the Vikings into and through the Roman and Greek times. So the ceremony side has been there, but also more of the practical side. When they focus on cremation for a practical reason to keep themselves safe, that was there too. So through those three cultures, cremation and embalming were used for different reasons.
Let's bring it up to a little bit more recent.
Mm-hmm.
And what about the early days of America? We were a nation of immigrants. Mainly from England, Germany, and Spain, and France, too, if you want to talk about the Louisiana Territory. Yeah. Do you know anything of what a typical funeral might have been like back in the early days of America?
Well, this actually is where it gets really interesting. As we said that the Egyptians embalmed strictly for long-term preservation, and the Greeks and the Romans embalmed for sanitation, and they also added cremation for sanitation reasons. The English Empire, forward to today's day and age, we have the embalming process for temporary restoration. So someone is presentable and looks appropriate so the family can come together as a group in a safe setting. Then it was a home. Now it is normally a funeral home or a facility. And they can come together, mourn together, and start on a spiritual movement together. Now, this is a really interesting fact. People always ask how it got so popular in the United States. Why are there so many funeral homes? When did embalming come from Europe to the U.S.? Did it happen in the 1770s? It did a little bit. Most of American embalming practices came through Abraham Lincoln.
Huh.
Yeah. The Civil War was so severe, and it was so dramatic, and it was so short-lived, just those four and a half years. And most of it was fought in the middle of our country. Most of those who fought in the war came from down south or way up north. And these poor boys passed away in war somewhere around Pennsylvania, Virginia, West Virginia, areas like that. It would take months to get them back to their mothers and their fathers and their wives in Boston, or in Maine, or in Vermont, or in New York. So Abraham Lincoln employed a small army of embalmers, supposedly around 10,000
My goodness.
Men were trained how to embalm in the fields. with what was called a gravity embalming tank. Same principles as a water tower. The higher the liquid goes, the further it has to fall, and as the shaft goes further south, it weans and weans, the pressure increases. They were able to embalm actually in the war fields. So Abraham Lincoln is looked at as one of the fathers of American embalming because it was not that popular before the Civil War. Now, it was just employed overnight, and men were trained and taught in this very specific, I mean extremely specific skill of how to preserve these young men to get them back to their families because the train system wasn't as competent and it wasn't designed as well. And we're talking a lot of summer months and hundreds, if not 1,000 miles away from where these kids were from. So Abe Lincoln's looked at as one of the fathers of American embalming. And then you look at the time frame of the Civil War versus where we are today. If you notice, most of the funeral homes in our area of the country opened up around 1880 to 1920 in that 40-year window. And the reason is when the war came to that abrupt end in 1865, there were 10,000 men with a very specific skill. A very specific skill. But there really wasn't a need yet because most folks stayed close to home, as you mentioned earlier. So most funeral homes seem to have opened up around 1880 and 1920, somewhere in that window. And the reason is most of these guys came from the war, taught their children this practice. And as our culture caught up with the practice of embalming, more and more folks wanted to see their loved ones. And it took folks a little while to get from one neighboring borough to another neighboring borough. So we embalmed for temporary restoration. And then it moved from having open casket viewings in homes to an actual funeral home, a building or a location or a facility where we could go and be safe and have our services held there. So most funeral homes were opened up in Western PA and the New York and West Virginia, Ohio area in that time window of 1880 and 1920, either by veterans from the Civil War or by their first generation children who were taught this practice by their dads.
This is interesting, isn't it, folks? A little bit of the history of the changes in the way we conduct funerals and burials here in the United States. We're speaking with Spencer DeGeibel. He's with us from the Spencer DeGeibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services here in Butler. We'll take a break. We'll go back and pick up our conversation on this interesting topic here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. One of our sponsors on the program today is Miller's Shoes. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. Hey, folks, you know, today is Friday the 13th, and they're having a big sale at Miller's Shoes. Friday the 13th, spectacular. It's not your unlucky day. It's your lucky day. Actually, it's your lucky days because the sale is on today, tomorrow, Sunday, and Monday. Shoes, boots, slippers, 25% off the entire regular stock. 25% off. And yes, that includes slippers. What a great holiday gift that is. Slippers. New pair of slippers for mom, dad, yourself. Where do you find slippers? Miller's Shoes, that's where. And they've got all your famous name brand athletic shoes, too. Timberland shoes and boots. They've got Skecher Go Walk boots. They've got Rockports. These are all great brands. Miller's Shoes, the Friday the 13th spectacular. Stop in, say hi to Jimmy or Tony or Johnny. Shoes, boots, slippers, 25% off the entire regular stock. That's today, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday at Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. Another one of our sponsors on the program today is Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Have any packages that have to go out to loved ones or family members, Christmas gifts? Yeah, getting down to rug-cutting time on that, aren't we? Why not let the folks at Gone Postal Butler package your items for shipping? It's convenient, it's fast, it's affordable. I've utilized their services personally. They're great. They package your items for shipping. You can ship them any way you want. I mean, that's your choice. U.S. Postal Service, UPS, FedEx. But they'll package them up and ship them out for you. They're located in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex. That complex is right behind Kings and Villa Grande restaurants there on Newcastle Road. They're open Monday through Friday. Gone Postal Butler. your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Let them package your items and gifts for the holidays. Going postal, Butler. We're talking on the It's Your Turn program today with Spencer D. Geibel from the Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services. We're talking a little bit about not just the history of the way we conduct funerals and burials here in the United States, but the way that it has changed over the years. Changed remarkably. You know, you may not realize that. I didn't realize, for example, that most funeral homes were started in that relatively short window there from the end of the Civil War to around 1920 or so.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And in many cases, it was because there were these thousands of skilled morticians.
Yeah, trained bombers from the Civil War.
From the Civil War. That's fascinating. What about recent changes? You mentioned one of the most noticeable things for the average person, I guess, would be a shortened time for viewing, significantly shortened in many cases.
Yeah, that is definitely a trend right now. Our culture is much more spread out now, and we are becoming busier and busier, it seems. And what I'm saying is most folks are aiming for a simpler, more practical, more condensed version of a funeral. And a lot of folks are taking traditional values and kind of meshing it with a very practical idea like simple cremation and having an open casket viewing still, followed by a service at a church. Something simple. The trends are changing dramatically right now. I'm not exactly sure what our current cremation rate is, but it is rapidly catching up to earth burial.
People from all different cultures and walks of life are considering cremation?
Most. Yeah, most cultures accept it. Most faiths accept it. And America is dramatically accepting it right now, rapidly, overnight it seems. In the 80s, the rate was nowhere near where it is today. And that's changing for a couple of different reasons. One is what we mentioned earlier, it simplifies things. The idea that there's not enough space is an absolute fallacy. An absolute fallacy.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah. You can bury every American in Rhode Island twice. Huh. It's an absolute fallacy. Space is not an issue whatsoever.
Maybe we think of that because of the stories we hear about Arlington National Cemetery, mm-hmm. and we just kind of figured that was the way in cemeteries all across the country. Not so. Mm-hmm.
There are some countries in the world, and I can't reference the names right now, but there are certain countries where your grave location is temporary because the population is so high, and the area is normally quarantined by water, normally a small, very small island. Mm-hmm. Your grave location is temporary, and you would go to a mass grave a few years after you have your private grave. Same idea as with caskets. Caskets used to be for rent. Caskets were always for rent, and they were only there to get you from your place of passing, which in the 1700s, the 1500s, it was your house.
I had no idea.
So you rented a casket, so it was easy to be carried to the cemetery. Then you were taken out of the casket and placed in the earth. The casket was for rent for transportation.
Where was the body buried in, like a shroud?
Normally a shroud, yes, exactly. Exactly. Very similar to today's current Orthodox Jewish ideas. Very similar.
But now we have, in some cases, some pretty ornate, pretty extravagant caskets.
There is a lot of jazz. Yes, there is. Caskets come in numerous different materials today. Metals, woods, there are now biodegradable caskets. That's an idea that has not really flourished in our country. There was a strong push for it about 10 to 15 years ago. It took off a little bit out west, but not much at all here to the
east. I saw a story about it in Time Magazine or Newsweek, one of the news weeklies, but it never really caught on.
Yeah, there's a lot of ideas with earth burial, with cremation options after the actual cremation process takes place. So our culture's in that weird kind of limbo stage of reaching for a new idea. Is it going to be strictly cremation with viewing? Is it going to be strictly traditional? Is it going to be strictly cremation? We're in that weird middle-of-the-road limbo period right now where we're kind of reaching for an idea. And so far, from my perspective, folks are leaning towards simplicity. They're leaning towards a practical, affordable idea. And that word is always brought up, and it kind of has to be in today's day and age, the affordability of certain types of services and certain types of design. And that is definitely a major, major factor in what our culture is choosing today.
Can you have a viewing and then a cremation? Can they be combined?
Most definitely. This is a very important fact to understand. Cremation does not oppose funeral. Cremation is the opposite of a burial. So the two final decisions to make are cremation or earth burial. Both those avenues have numerous avenues. There can be earth burial preceded by a full traditional funeral. There can be earth burial preceded by a shortened traditional funeral. There can be earth burial preceded by a small service at the funeral home. And there can be direct earth burial. Cremation is the exact same way. There can be cremation following a church service or a Roman Catholic mass embalmed in a rental casket. There can be cremation following a short service at a funeral home or a church. There can be a simple service prior to cremation, and there can also, like direct burial, there can be direct cremation. So it's very important for us to understand that cremation is not the opposite or doesn't go against the idea of a funeral or a ceremony. It is another option beside burial. So those are always the two main avenues, cremation or burial, and then each of those avenues have different options.
Good point to explain. In your practice, and by the way, Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services, located where, Spencer?
New Castle Hill, 140 New Castle Road, Butler, PA, 16001.
In your practice, do you find that more people these days are doing advanced planning for their funerals?
I don't know if I would say more, but a lot. A lot of folks get to that point, and it is a practical, rational decision. And I try to educate folks before I do anything with their service ideas, at need or pre-need. I try to educate them. And I want all my families to understand that pre-planning their funeral is not planning their death. It is protecting their family and protecting their assets and protecting their wishes. When someone goes into a funeral home and organizes their pre-arrangements, it is not planning their death. It is not prophesizing their passing. It is organizing their life currently for a situation which is going to occur one day, and it protects their family.
Do a lot of couples do this together?
Yes, that is pretty common. A lot do come in together, and the husband or the wife, they are normally one of the two is the one that really wants it, and the other one complies, and they make arrangements also. And I hear it every single time. I'm so happy we did this.
What about the concept of paying in advance? Is this relatively new? I don't recall hearing about this until like 20, 25 years ago.
No, I wouldn't say relatively new. It's become a lot more popular in the last 30 to 40 years. You referenced 25. Folks are able to invest money into an account or into a policy or into a trust. Somewhere, some idea that guarantees some level of growth. And the principle behind prearranging is someone invests money into an account or a policy that's designed to grow faster than the natural inflation of funeral homes. So you invest at today's cost, but you're covered fully in tomorrow's cost.
Is your investment guaranteed?
Yes. Yes. If your plans stay the exact same, most funeral homes agree to offer and to guarantee all services. Hmm.
Does the more simplified funeral, the whole process more simplified that you say is a growing trend, I hate to be mercenary about this, but does that tend to cost less then?
Most definitely. Most definitely. The average cost of a cremation or a cremation service is less than the average cost of a burial or a burial traditional funeral service. And that is one of the pressing factors in today's world, is folks are very unfortunately making decisions based off cost versus preference or tradition. And this can be seen from numerous different perspectives. But it really, really has become unfortunate where folks are strictly making decisions based off of cost. But it happens every day, and I completely understand it. So I'm trying to find ways to offer a traditional funeral or a near-traditional funeral for so much of a dramatically lowered cost that it lets more people actually, you know, receive and be able to afford what they want versus having to make a decision based off their wallets.
We've kind of scratched the surface today because we have only a half an hour together. Yeah. If people have questions about this, perhaps due to some of the things that we've touched on today, you would be willing to consult with them?
I would love that, yes. I will answer phone calls 24 hours a day on the funeral home's phone number, which is 724-287-4042. And I always offer my private cell number to the public. And my private cell phone number is 412-605-8340. And folks can always drop in at the funeral home or reach me through the website, which is spencerdgeibel.com.
And some people might want a little bit more information on some of these changes. I know it's relatively recent, that, you know, it was common for following a death for, you know, a viewing to last
two, three days,
maybe even 3 days. And that just doesn't happen very much anymore. And I've had people question that, you know. They say, well, you know, I would love to have gone to see the family of so-and-so, but, you know, it was only one day and I was tied up with that. That's the growing trend. Yeah. People might want to talk to you about that.
Yeah, and that was the whole idea behind me bringing the funeral home to Butler, was to design a building and a price line and a package line where it applies to what folks actually want today and make it affordable for them.
Spencer D. Geibel visiting with us today. Appreciate the historical perspective on this.
Oh, I enjoyed it too, Dave. Thank you.
That was interesting.
Thank you.
Spencer D. Geibel, Funeral Home and Cremation Services. You're about halfway up Newcastle Hill, right?
Yeah, I'm one driveway before the State Police Barracks Road.
Nice to have you here today.
Thank you, sir.
Coming up, it's Friday already. Wow. Coming up on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn, and we're going to be talking about, is it Monday that we're doing? Yes. We are approaching the